streaming back and forth in the background. Most communications between software on the internet are kind of very low signal speed, text-based signals going back and forth and such. So I have a lot of things that start up relatively all at once, and they don't clog my Ethernet. So, but I will ask John, is there any particular time of the day that he notices this problem more than any other?
No, it can happen any time. The only thing that like I say, would might be a thing is if I start up the computer, everything's great. Like I say, I have a direct wire Ethernet to it, and everything goes good. Especially if I let the computer just lay and it's in sleep mode, and then when it kicks back, it tends to work good for maybe 10, 15 minutes, and then I get this connection problem. And again, it just seems very strange to me if it's the router or if it's the provider that I can switch over to Wi-Fi. And then why does the Wi-Fi work great? And but then that begins to have the same problem too, where it kicks out. So, you know, if you come on, then it'll just kick right out. Then it'll come back on, it'll kick right out.
Maybe try to reboot everything to SCP.
Yes, Chris. So, Rich, you're going with the try turning it off and turning it on. I guess it would be theoretically possible if you have some kind of problem with the router that's heat sensitive. Different circuits are being used for Ethernet translation versus the wireless, the Wi-Fi, so they can individually overheat and then malfunction. But Chris is our IT guy, so what do you think, Chris?
Well, it sounds like the gentleman, John, with the problem is out on Long Island, and I can report he's probably using Ops Online, as most of Long Island is. Even if he's paying for service, it's really going through Ops Online in most cases. And Altice has bought Ops Online. Altice is a European-based company. And let's just say that they are very, very, very cheap. And they are switching all of the equipment that they utilize. You might be noticing you have problems with email. If you're using OptOnline's email system, is a disaster since Altice has taken over. And also their internet has been a disaster. And it sounds to me like your problem is exactly that, because it's a DHC problem that they have currently for about, oh, maybe 2 months now. Their DHCP servers are too small, and they have too many clients trying to get IP addresses. DHCP is what gives you your home address on the internet, and they have too many people accessing their server to trying to get an address, and that could very well be the problem. K2STP.
Okay, Chris, thanks for that. You're making a little small assumption. John is, in fact, coming in through Echo Link, and he's located in Florida. But I don't know exactly the situation in Florida. It could be very, very similar, because I'm sure the same type of nonsense is going on in other states in the Union.
Yeah, very well could be, because Altice is buying up everything from some European-based company, and they're buying all the internet companies. But yeah, that's funny. I could have sworn he was coming into Selden. Okay.
What is the speed? The measurement speed, the upload and download.
Yeah, Wesley, I don't think it's a matter of speed. The way that John is presenting this is he gets these little notices on the screen that the server is down. So there's a connection flaw. It's not that things are just kind of sluggish. It's just that things are kind of stopping. But I'll pass it on. John, if you have any comments, especially Wesley would like to know if you have any speed when it's acting up, or whether it's just kind of acting as though it's a paperweight at that point.
Yeah, my speed is phenomenal. I actually changed the coax that comes from the, you know, they changed the size of the coax. It comes from the light pole into the house, and then they route a smaller coax with a much higher loss. just because they want the technician to be in and out and make the bends easier, etc. So I rewired it, and I have the same exact coax as what comes off the utility pole, and it works great, lightning speed. And then, like I say, while I'm on it for quite a while, she'll just start with these problems kicking out. And I noticed a freeze. That's something I should have mentioned. Where screen will freeze, and I can't use the mouse. I thought it was the computer, but now I'm starting to think that it's the internet, where it's just not connecting to the page. So that'll go, and then, like I say, it'll come or go. Then I'll get the message, no internet. I'll switch over to Wi-Fi. Amazingly, the Wi-Fi works. So I got to then wonder, is it the server? Because it's not coming through the internet. Maybe it's the Ethernet. Maybe it's the computer. Because now the Wi-Fi, you know, kicks on. But then in time, not too long after that, the Wi-Fi will give me the problem. So, you know, that's where the trickery comes in.
Okay, so it's not slow and fast. It's faster, non-existent. And the idea that the mouse cursor freezes up, although I guess if you're using programs that are utilizing the internet connection, having weird things happen with the internet connection, I guess could interact with the mouse cursor. It kind of points a little bit more to hardware or software. So that's curious. Chris, any further thoughts on the subject? Other than calling up and spending time complaining, anything you think he could do to kind of obviate it? Also, one thing I really want to get straight with you, John, is do you have any other equipment that connects to the internet that you could test out? Because that would be a very good A-B test for your situation. If that's your only computer, iPad, cell phone, what have you, then so be it. But if you have something else, can you replicate the same thing on the other piece of equipment or not would be important.
WB2IKT is coming.
Yes, IKT.
Okay. I'm going to assume that the gentleman who said that it may be a DHCP problem is correct. I don't know. I have Fidos in service. But the first place I would look is in his router, his interface to the LegalVision network from his own local area network. Log on to that router, see if there's any error messages, and your router at home, that device is providing the DHCP to your home network. Not Altice's network, nothing else, but the only DHCP that they provide would be to the router. Your router, that's your public IP address. Ones on your 192.168 network are private network. They are provided by your router. So I would be administrating the router, log on to the administrative page, see what error messages they make, and make sure that that's all right. It could be that you're having some kind of a weird router problem instead of a generic network problem. A possibility, and chances are you actually are having a network problem as described, but this would be one thing I would really want to check first. But
okay, AC2GS, by the way. Thank you, George. I think Chris was alluding to the, what is it, the NAT? Because there's only so many old version IP addresses available, ISPs reuse their dynamic IP addresses, and so they have a NAT that they give you one of their public IP addresses, and then the router, as you mentioned, with the DHCP offers a group of NAT internal IP addresses. So I think what Chris was alluding to was the rotating IP addressability of dynamic IP addresses that ISPs have to deal with.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Roy. I'm referring to DHC to your public address. I understand what the gentleman's saying, and he is right. With DHCP locally, it would be a router problem. But I'm referring to they're having major problems with the DHCP, their internal servers for DHCP, to give your router an IP address to address the network. And it's been a giant headache. Let's just say I'm simplifying it. There's some major issues they're having, and that's it's all Altice. And the fact that his mouse is freezing is probably because the programs in the background are, you know, waiting for the internet to come back, and everything's just on hold, and his computer kind of freezes. And when you put Wi-Fi on, I'm going to guess he's using Altice's or whoever's internet provider there. They're using their router, and sometimes the Wi-Fi has its own IP address separate from the hardware IP address. So he switches over, and he gets back on the internet through his other IP address, which is still working somehow.
Just check the router log, you know. Look for that change in the public IP address. And also look at your lease time. See how often they're renewing that lease. Typically, they run for many, many hours before it's due. And the length of that lease is kind of funny, because at half the length of the lease, it begins to ask for renewing the lease. Then at three-quarters of the length, it asks again. And if it gets it, the lease length is extended. What you don't want to do is run out of lease, the HCP, and that's something the router is going to log. Like,
okay, that's a good point. I think every time I've seen lease time, they were much longer than a few hours. But yeah, it could be something like that. And Chris, I am totally unfamiliar with routers that offer different ISP IP addresses. I have BIOS myself, and the wireless portion of the router utilizes the same dynamic IP address as my wired one. So that's something new. I was unaware that there are some services that provide two separate IP addresses. That would probably wreak a lot of havoc with some people, because a lot of companies try and make sure that you're not giving your password to other people by utilizing a known IP address. And if you start to pop up on unknown IP addresses, which happens to me because I tend to use VPN, they tend to yell and scream and jump up and down.
WB2IKC again. Just a comment. The world ran out of IP version 4 addresses a while ago. That doesn't mean they don't exist anymore. It means there's no more new ones to allocate. And as a result, most carriers have switched to a dual address scheme in which you're using IPv version 6 parallel with IP version 4. And some sites use version 6, and some sites use version 4. It's called a dual stack approach. It's very common, and it shouldn't cause any errors. But
yeah, I've heard that. My computer system still uses IP4 because internally you don't really need IP6. You know, it has its own private set of IP addresses. But yeah, I understand that ISP providers have kind of a parallel IP6 and IP4 capability.
A2SCP.
Yeah, Roy, just one thing before I turn it over to the other station here. There is a tool, and it's freeware, that you can call Wireshark. Run that on one of your affected PCs, and it's basically a protocol analyzer. It'll tell you everything that's going on your Ethernet port, if that's what you're using, or what your wireless port is doing. And configure what port it captures data on. Maybe astounded at all the stuff it picks up. Right?
Yes, I've played with Wireshark. It's really scary of all these people, all these IP addresses pinging all the ports on my machine trying to get in and do something weird. Chris recognized, I just want to get one answer from John. I want to know if John has any other computers that he can test against this. And if the other computer, be it cell phone, be it iPad, whatever, demonstrates the same problem, because I think that's a big fork in the road. So let me first see if I could get that answer from John, then we'll go back to Chris, who wants to say something.
Yeah, Roy, I was thinking the same thing. I got a laptop, just out of sheer laziness, I'm going to now. You know, thank everybody here for the inspiration. You know, like any problem, you just live with it, you know. I'm going to get out the laptop and use that as the main computer and just track it. And yeah, you're right, you know, and then we can eliminate it here, technologically. You know, I've really done that before you even asked. But I think you guys may be onto something with this network. Like I say, I do get this message. A change of network has been detected. So, like, when I run the diagnostics on the computer and it's trying to hook up, you know, this little box will pop up. A change of network has been detected. But I'm going to go with using a laptop for a while and see how that works. So thank you for everybody's input.
You're welcome, John. Chris, what did you want to say?
You mentioned you thought the leases were a lot longer for IP addresses publicly, and I can tell you my opt-online lease I had for years, so I had the same exact IP address for 5 or 6 years at one point, rebooted everything, reset some equipment at one point, and then I came up with a new one, and I had that one for about 3 years, so they actually weren't even terminating leases or timing out leases for a long time. But I can tell you now with Altice, almost twice a day I'm getting a different public IP address. In some ways that's good. It's more secure. It's harder for someone to hack into you. They can't find you again. That's maybe why they're doing it. I don't know. But I do know that they're a very cheap company, and I personally know some of the hardware they've purchased their new servers and whatnot, and it's absolute junk, and they're having a lot of problems. But the gentleman has a second device. You must have a phone, cell phone, or Wi-Fi, and you can utilize those devices to test it while your other device is down as well. K2STP.
Yeah, I mean, that's good advice as well, Chris. And there's different ways of dealing with lease times. You could have a lease time where it just returns a continue and you just hold on to the same lease. I wouldn't like that new feature of the dynamic IP address changing every few days, because I have a lot of things. I mean, the audio stream for the repeater. I have another club's repeater that I'm doing an audio stream. And if a couple of times a day the IP address would change, it would wreak havoc, even though I'm using a dynamic name server software. But still, he has a laptop, so he's going to try the laptop and see if the laptop produces the same problems. And ultimately, if the laptop produces the same exact problems, he knows it's the router and the ISP. If, for whatever reason, the laptop is perfect and has no problems, then he knows his PC is squirreling.
I have a question about Wireshark.
Yes, Wesley?
Yeah, you mentioned Wireshark program as a freeware. Then he said that it's scary. I use VPN. So the first question is, if it's a freeware, usually there is nothing for, there is something for something, so it's not that you have something for free. But there must be the reason that somebody made the software and put it as a freeware, and what that might be. And the second thing is, how does it work with VPN?
Okay, I don't know. I never really pointed it at my VPN, so I don't know how it particularly interacts with the VPN. A lot of things are free as promotion for either more sophisticated, more professional, more functionality, or just to be well known in the industry. So when they charge for other services, people say, those are the guys that give away the Wireshark thing. So I don't exactly know the details. of the nature of it being free, but there's a lot of software out there that's blissfully free that isn't pirateware or some kind of a virus or a snake or something. So there's, it's always good to be suspicious, but there's a lot of free stuff out there that's very useful and that don't have any strings attached.
Yeah, the gentleman who mentioned the Wireshark, maybe he could add some more information.
Well, I guess not. I just Googled it. Google is your friend. And apparently it's an open source product. So, again, there are a lot of open source pieces of software out there due to the generosity of a lot of people. Apparently Wireshark's original author was a guy called Gerald Coombs, and it's been around since 1998. So, and its last stable release was just May 24th of this year. So it's a case of open source.
Yeah, WB2IKC. Roy, I was hoping that you would have asked me to officially transfer it for the man. Roy?
Sure, George.
Okay. I have used Wireshark since it was called Ethereal, which was back in the 90s. I've used it at work. I've taken a course or two on it. Once upon a time, I was reasonably proficient with it. It takes all kinds of statistics when you're using it. Was an open source software project. It is now funded by a company called Riverbed that makes edge internet devices that do compression, protocol spoofing, and some other technologies to reduce, caching, that's the other one, to reduce internet latency. If you have a VPN, going to see encrypted data, and I'm not sure if there's a tool for it to allow it to see what goes on inside your VPN, and that, I guess, is a Wireshark question, and you can go to Wireshark. I've never used it with a VPN, and I could easily see that disrupting things. So, Wes, your best bet is to actually go to Wireshark, and you don't have to download the program, but download the user's guide and see what that says about using it to do that.
AC2GS. Well, thank you, George. I would guess that as good Wireshark is, they can't decrypt VPNs in real time, because then the security of VPNs would be terrible. So my guess would be that if you shielded everything with a VPN, the only thing that it would perceive going out is encrypted, unintelligible data. Coming back in, if it was going through your ISP IP address, should be perfectly fine. But responses going through the VPN would also be encrypted. So it would probably complicate life using a VPN.
Yeah, but in this case, it's your VPN, and if you're running it at your endpoint, you could enter the encryption key. And given that, it may work very well. I'm just not sure because I haven't used it that way.
I guess so. I don't know if I have access to the actual encryption key. I have access to the account with the VPN provider, but I don't think they actually supply encryption, decryption keys to users. I might be wrong.
Yeah, most of them use a certificate of some sort or another, and it certainly does HTTPS type traffic, so I'm pretty sure there is a way to do it. I just don't know what it is.
Okay, so we'll leave it as a question mark. But again, I don't want to give anyone the sense that if it's free, it's either useless or it's some kind of scheme to steal from you. I have benefited for many years from open source software, or pseudo open source, you know, companies that, that give away some entry products to get a good reputation and such. So, you know, it's always good to be a little bit wary of too good a deal, but in the case of open source software, there's a lot of examples of perfectly fine free software that's very useful, very effective. I use some every day on my computers without any problem.
Thank you, my dear. In other words, a Blender, the free software, is excellent. There are some companies that made a copy of it and they tried to sell it with little changes and graphics on it, but it's actually the same program. DaVinci Resolve, free version, it's also free software. So, yes, I do agree with you. What I have is I have an antivirus program with the VPN as package. Costs a lot of money. It's one, it's a European one. It's a reputable one, but it's expensive. And I don't have a key for it. Interesting.
Okay. I have a separate VPN and I have a separate I use Webroot as an antivirus. It works fine with me. I have to use it for really ridiculous things. I use Echolink in order to be a node for another club's repeater. But if I then use Echolink with my call sign on the same IP address, the guys at Echolink get very upset with me and they email me saying that it's against their rules for two IP software applications to run using the same IP address. So simply what I did was I did one of the instances behind a VPN, so they're not getting the same IP address. And, you know, it's always nice to have a VPN in your back pocket. If you ever watch YouTube, there's a lot of advertisements for VPNs. For the most part, they're promoting the ability to change the region so that if videos are allowed in certain countries but not others, you can simulate being in a different country by changing your VPN address for one of the IP addresses located in one of the other countries. And in other cases, it's more of a security measure that your ISP can't sniff your packets and know if you're using, say, torrents or something else. And some ISPs disallow certain ports. So if you try to connect to a particular port in the open with your ISP, they may block it at their central office, whereas if you encrypt it through VPN, it goes to the VPN without the ISP people's knowledge, and it works.
Thank you for that information. My package has VPN, but also certain things like a custom firewall. In other words, I'm not touching the Windows firewall, I'm touching only the firewall on the program. And I get put to sleep all of the programs. So I say I have a 30 program. And I see that I have incredible speed. I also have a fire. So I see when I put all of the programs to sleep, I just use one, let's say the browser, and a particular browser, because I use many different browsers, then I see a big difference in speed of the computer and the application, although I have a really good one. Some other things is it gives me logs of the activity, and there are so many things. Fingerprint. Fingerprint. It changes fingerprint on the spot, or fingerprint, let's say, every hour. So if somebody is trying to catch my network based on that, he can't. I don't know if you have the same feature.
Yeah, I have a separate piece of software that does that. I have a firewall that's not part of the computer. It's running on a Raspberry Pi. I have a lot of belt and suspenders, and it doesn't slow down my system. I mean, I bought a very nice computer. You did too. Mine has 16 cores and a lot of memory. It's a nice fast thing. It would have to be, because unfortunately I run way too many things. My web browser alone has at least 25 pages open simultaneously. I mean, if anyone goes to QRG and looks me up, they can get a vague idea of what it looks like during a TechNet with my three monitors and such, and my little iPad on the other, on the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side, my Lenovo. It's a tablet. Running all kinds of screens. I'm looking at 15 things every second.
Yeah, that is true. That's just what I have, yes. I understand exactly what you're talking about. I have 6-7 computers working at the same time. And interesting is that I can see the activity on the separate monitor on it. I don't know who's logging into me, but I can see the bar, the graph on it. Also, so many things to talk about. Anyhow, I think we beat all of the pushers on it. Thank you very much, and to you.
Okay, very good, Wesley. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. And, the more screens you have, the more information you have, the busier you get, unfortunately. So I'm looking at all these things. I'm looking at my I found the envelope going through Echolink. I think I mentioned this in the past. Dick, may rest in peace, used to listen audibly to his signal, but because my antennas are too close and they defense, I can't really accomplish that. And the other ways that I could would have too much of a latency error on the receiving signal, so it would probably confuse the heck out of me. So instead, I have a little wave indicator, and I could roughly, I can certainly know when I'm not transmitting at all, but I can to a degree perceive how much background noise that signal might be. So there's a lot of things you can do with computers. They're great to have. They're wonderful tools. They can drive you insane, though. So, they're very useful tools. I've enjoyed playing around with computers for so many years. I don't really play games. There are some people out there that actually play games on these things. It takes me so much time to figure out how to debug and get the computers to do what I want that I consider that the similar challenge of a game. And at least I get something at the end. I get something that works and does what I want it to do. Anyway, anyone with any other comments on this particular subject before we move on?
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, John.
Yeah, just a quick one. I did intend on buying a new router, something that would give me 8 ports in there, because like I said, I hardwired the house. Is there anybody out there has any recommendations? Is there a specific brand of router that's known, sort of like with car parts? TRW was known to put out great heavy-duty parts, etc., not just the cheap knockoffs. Any particular brand of routers that stand out?
Well, I'll open it up to the audience. I have Fios. With Fios, you really don't have any options. You have to kind of go with theirs because Verizon really has control of this router. You know, they can reset it. They can do all kinds of things. And if you try and set things up so they can't, they get very upset with you. So you first probably best to check with your ISP for the approved list of routers that they'll work nicely with. But you don't necessarily need a router. I don't just use a router. I use a switch along with the router. So the router only allows for two Ethernet cables, but you plug one of the Ethernet cables into a switch, either a managed switch, you can go with an unmanaged switch, they're fine, and you can get as much as 16 ports on most of these things. They cost about $150, $160. Stick with name brands, you know, go to Amazon and look at the review list and the ones that have sold a couple of thousand and they get about 5 or 4 stars, you're usually good with. Stay away from no-name weird Chinese brands that just popped up last Wednesday, and it should be good.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
My router has been acting up a little bit, and I've researched this one that I'm planning on getting if it does continue to act up, and it's the Google Wi-Fi router. It's supposed to be excellent, plug and play type of thing, which is very nice. And then if you get like maybe two of them, if you want further range, let's say into the backyard or further away, it's supposed to be, again, a plug-and-play type of thing. So I'm looking into that. I think they're like $200 or something. But we're gonna try that next time. Back to you, Roy.
Paul, what's your ISP?
Oh, I have no idea. Right now, I'm just talking about the this thing is supposed to be good for no matter what you hook it up to. If you read about it, they call it the best Wi-Fi router 2023. So whatever is clear, that's what I'm reading. But we'll see. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, it's just that, like I said, I'm Fios from Verizon. So if you're Fios, then my guess would be it wouldn't play with the Google Wi-Fi router. There are some internet service providers that have kind of open-ended generic router function, and then there are others that like to lock it down real tight, like Fios. So I don't know if your cable TV-based ISP or Fios or what, but it's kind of important. Ad copy is always dubious. So, even though Google might say that it works on all routers, I would be willing to bet money that if I tried to plug it into my Fios, nothing would happen.
Okay, now I understand the question. Yeah, it's Cablevision. Back to you.
Oh, okay, so it may very well work with Cablevision. I do not know. I just kind of researched my own ISP provider about... my feed is relatively slow these days, and I contacted them and asked them whether I'd be able to increase the speed without changing all of the hardware, and they said yes, and then they went on to explain how I have to change all the hardware. So I said thank you, but no thank you. So that's where I am right now with that. But it does about 25 MPS, so that's pretty good.
Yes, WB2IK, good.
Yes, George.
Okay. Yeah, I think Roy, you're absolutely right, and those reviews are only your point of space. Number one, what are your requirements? Flesh them out. You have, how many ports, what type of speed, wireless router, what modes of wireless, 802.11. It used to be pretty simple. There was 802.11b, 802.11g in the 2.4 gigahertz band, and there was 802.11a that was in the 5 gigahertz. Both of those are in the ISM range. These days, Wi-Fi has expanded, and there's a lot more frequency ranges, a lot more modulation schemes, which are more advanced, that can give you a lot of speed. So the question is, what speed do you need, distance to be covered, how many ports on Ethernet versus wireless, etc. Then you have to talk, and Roy is absolutely right, your ISP has a lot to say about that.
at the very least, when you hook it up, they're going to want to make sure that your MAC address is registered, so they know that, you know, nobody's trying to pirate something from them. That that MAC address with your router has to be traceable to your account, however they do that. And in the case of Fios, one thing he didn't say, Roy, is that there is a special interface that, as far as I can tell, all the Fios uses, and that's called a MoCA interface. And that MoCA interface goes to the set-top boxes in your home, which are, in fact, connected to your router. And if your router goes down, set-top boxes, especially those with recorders, don't work very well, if they work at all. So there's a whole bunch of other stuff you sort of have to look at before you can select a router. Now, having said all that, a lot of hams that I have had good luck with Ubiquiti routers, which are pretty good. A lot of folks have had good luck with Asus and Acer routers, and Linksys is a router that's had some specifically good models that people play with. And those are all brand name routers. You can find them in most of the stores. You can find them on Amazon. And they work very well. But, and Roy is right, just beware of the no-name ones or the ones with a name that nobody ever heard of, or it looks like somebody stole it from a comic book. Going back to you, but I think you've given them some good advice. But above all, you know, those reviews are based on what the reviewer needs. That's probably not exactly what you need, so make your own requirements first. Roy?
Thank you, Jim. Wesley recognized. Thank you, George. Yeah, I agree with just about everything you said. It's always important to know what the individual needs. You know, if you happen to have the latest, greatest Wi-Fi capability on your computer, then 6E, you know, if you want to, go crazy. If you don't have a modern-day Wi-Fi capable equipment and you don't need the bells and whistles, then you don't necessarily need something like 6E capability. So ultimately, you know, you should try and figure out how many ports you need and what capability you need. And of course, I'll sound redundant, always contact your ISP to just kind of double check that it's compatible with your setup. You know, even though nowadays it's not that difficult to return stuff, you know, who needs the trouble? Wesley, you wanted to say something on this subject?
Yeah, nobody mentioned the speed. 10/100 or gigabit important for the router. And the second thing is that your Fios could be switched to the bridge mode. And by that, you can use the external router, which I use. And then you could have a different IP address for it. So let's say 192.168.2.1 instead of 1.1, right, on the router by itself. Now, some of the routers, they have their own software that when you log to the router, you can see the activity on all of the computers. If you have many computers, you can actually see all of the computers in the network in that menu, which I have. And you see how many devices is online at that particular moment. Now, if you switch to the graph, you could see the activity on Wi-Fi. So if, let's say, none of your devices is using a Wi-Fi, but you see the activity on it, and you can switch from wired to wireless, or to the network, which I have, then it means somebody hacked to your Wi-Fi, which is pretty often done. I saw so many times that people were trying to log, sometimes successful, to it, even though that I had a very strong password on it, so I was just adding another a letter or another digit into the password till I reached the level where nobody was able to hack anymore, and to entry.
Okay, it sounds like you're in a crypto war zone there. is that people are powering their way through your Wi-Fi setup. I haven't had anyone do that for more than a few years when, in the bad old days, when the coding encryption was very easy to crack and people would park themselves in front of my house for a while and I would notice that they were trying to do that and screw around with them. It's a different thing to bridge a router than to replace a router. I think that John wants to replace his router. He's dubious about it and he just wants to replace it. You can always bridge another router into the primary router and gain some capability, but at the price of having the old router still being the initial connection for the ISP. So if you're concerned about the technology of the ISP's router, just bridging it isn't going to improve that much.
Yeah, Dr. Roy, thank you for all of those information, because they are very helpful, but it could be a very simple thing. Since I have the monitor on my router, so I could see the activity, if let's say, there is a simple scanner, and it's available online, that people could buy, and it scans the network. So the guy could be sitting in a car, or could be next house, or whatever, and simply scanning your network. Okay, and they can break into it and then use your Wi-Fi. Usually the generic ones start from 0, 1, 2, 3, whatever, up to 9, right? But many people don't change it. But the problem that was described could be also because somebody, everything is hunky-dory, but somebody logged into and is pulling the files from your computer. Now, when it's pulling the files from your computer, I don't expect that somebody could load something to your computer, then actually stealing, right? Then you have a lot of traffic on your computer. So that could actually affect the speed of the Internet. Entering here.
Okay, AC2GS, by the way. I understand. I just think that John's situation is different than yours and mine. He has one computer that he uses. I don't think he's concerned about being cyber-stalked or cyber-attacked. And I think keeping it simple is the best approach. So, he's not terribly happy, I guess, with the router. And he would like a newer technical version of a router that had a few more Ethernet ports on it. So, you know, bridging, he'd have to figure out how to turn his router into a bridge, and then he'd have to learn how to use a router as a bridged router, and I don't think that that's what he's really looking for. So it's a good solution for a different problem.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I set up. Amazon now has it for $68. It's called Google Nest Wi-Fi, Google Nest, N-E-S-T Wi-Fi, AC2200, mesh Wi-Fi system, the Wi-Fi router. Looks like it has two Ethernet connections, but you know everything else would be Wi-Fi. So I don't know. Look into it. It's something that would be worth looking into. If you go to, I don't know if he's a member of Costco, if you go into Costco and there's a problem, they'll take it right back. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
November 2?
Yeah, I think that's you, John. I only got the November 2.
Yeah, well, it is me. Yeah, no, the idea of replacing the router was before any of the problems. It's just an afterthought, too. Wait, you know, replace the router, maybe that's it. But I'm going to go with the laptop, so that's, you know, and just see what happens. But I'm going to, I plan, like I mentioned, I wired everything, TVs, everything, computer for Ethernet. So I just don't have enough ports. That's the only reason for looking to change the router. I didn't have any knowledge of what you were talking about. I know you just can't, like a telephone line, plug an Ethernet cable in and then just, well, you can. You can then just make it into a multi-device ports that have, you know, unlimited amount of ports going in, but then you can only use one at a time. But I know you weren't talking about that. I didn't know that existed, where there's something, from what you described, it sounds like you come off one of the ports in the router and then go into this electronic switch, and then that switches you back and forth between X amount of ports. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's called an Ethernet switch. Just Google the term Ethernet switch, and they come in 4 ports, 8 ports, 12 ports, 16 ports, and it's just a row of female Ethernet connectors. If you plug in your the output of your router to one of any of them, it's an intelligent circuit inside. It will figure out the directions for things. It will figure out where the other computers are plugged into, what their IP address is. So it's a switching network. It can send multiple packets to multiple places almost simultaneously. It doesn't have any collisions because it's able to direct the packets to the appropriate connector. So it's very easy. It's plug and play. They make manage that's a little bit more complicated, but nothing that I think that you would need. I don't use a managed switch, but just look up Ethernet switch. And like I said, there are a bunch of well-known companies that Amazon has sold thousands of models of it, and you can get it relatively cheap. It can expand the number of Ethernet connections all the way up. I think the biggest one I saw that wasn't commercial was 24, which is kind of ridiculous for a home Ethernet switch.
Okay, yes, that's the way I'm going to go then. Thank you. I'm definitely going to look into it. I'm going to be bailing out here, so thank you again. Great bet. One quick question, though, Roy. I sent you a holiday card back in December. I don't know if you ever got it, though, because so many were returned. The post office is in such disarray. Did you ever get it?
I think I did. I'm you know, it's difficult for me to tell which season. This last season, I got less Christmas cards than usual. But I remember at least one year you sent me one. It was probably this year. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, you're welcome. It was amazing. I got probably four of them back from New York, and they had this computer-generated stamp on it saying invalid address. And the address was perfect. So, you know, I just wanted to check. Then I found out that several weren't even returned. They just were never arrived. Okay, good.
Yes, well, the post office works in a serious way. I ordered some stamps from the Ukraine, and I tracked it. It tracked all the way to my local post office zone, and then in my local post office, if you think of it, from war-torn Ukraine all the way to Brooklyn, New York, and in my local post office, they completely lost the darn thing.
Unfortunately, not surprising. All right, listen, thanks again for a great night, Roy, and thank you to everybody else for all the advice. November 2 with Charlie, and we're going on the way.
Okay, very good, John. Thank you for participating tonight. You know where we are. If you have any further questions, when you figure out exactly what went wrong and what went right, please come back and tell us about it.
Question.
100%, we'll do one.
Okay, very good. Wesley, I'll let you speak in a second. I just wanted to make a small comment. Paul mentioned Google Wi-Fi mesh routers. Mesh routers are very fascinating and interesting things. I have always had a love-hate relationship with Wi-Fi technology. I find that it isn't quite as intelligent as it was promoted to be. Theoretically, it should be able to link to nearby Wi-Fi access points. So if you have one access point at one end of your house and you go to the other end of the house, theoretically your electronics should say, oops, let me switch over to this far better signal for the time being. That almost never happens. So they invented this newer technology called mesh. With mesh technology, which the Google Wi-Fi router uses as well, you have one ID name. With Wi-Fi access points, usually each access point has a unique identifier. But with meshes, they all use the same identifier. They're supposed to be a little bit more proactive with rerouting the Wi-Fi signals accordingly. So I invested in what now is owned by Amazon, Aero Wi-Fi meshes. I have them all over my house. And unfortunately, this Wi-Fi is still a little stupid. It will randomly connect to Wi-Fi access points on the other side of the house for a lousy signal rather than the one, you know, 6 feet away from it. So Wi-Fi is another thing that is great, but it's terrible. Anyway, Wesley, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, it looks like I have a similar antivirus and a VPN to mine. Do you have, that VPN came also with the custom or their own browser? And the second question is, do you have in your firewall ability to switch off a certain programs or browsers or actions? So let's say we have a Google browser and we have a Firefox and we have whatever we have, and you can actually disable it. So it's trying to connect, but it's showing no internet connection. That is my question, Becky.
Not exactly, but something similar. I use private internet access, I think, PIA. The software itself, it doesn't give me a browser. I have way too many browsers. I don't need another browser. But you are able to go into the settings for PIA. You can have it connect directly to the ISP. You can have it directly connect to the VPN, or you could have an application directly not connect to anything. So functionally, you can do the same thing, I guess. But it operates through the setup application or the VPN.
Okay, no, the reason that I ask you is because I found it also, in terms of speed and comfortability, very, very much useful. So let's say 20, 30 programs, either I can put them to sleep, or if I see that it is, usually when you have open some URLs you have opened and they want to update or they want to be active, and you see that they coming up and coming up and coming up. So you can also check it in settings and see how many times that they're trying to pop in. So you can simply disable them. I found it really helpful. Thank you.
Okay. I mean, Google Chrome itself has the settings to when a window doesn't refresh, it puts it to sleep. And a way around it, thankfully, because when they implemented it, I had set up web pages to update them after a net. You know, I would change some web pages, and I would then save them after the net was over. It served my purpose to set that change up before the net began. And I was noticing that Google Chrome was basically putting my connections to sleep, and when I brought them up, they lost the new pages and defaulted to the previous pages. But, you know, like everything, there tends to be a setting for that. So Google Chrome can be, the default is that if the window is not actively doing something and you're not displaying it, it's just one of the tabs, it will put it to sleep. So, you know, a lot of programmers think alike. So you can accomplish the same thing on a bunch of different methods.
Thank you very much for all of that information. I'll talk to you.
Okay. Let's see. Ryan, are you still with us tonight? Ryan, K0BB.
Yeah, I'm here, Roy. I have my question if you're ready.
Yeah, sure. Please.
So, I obviously have a larger thing, as you know, from the email, but I've actually answered a lot of my questions about capacity that I was talking about with this network, but basically the question I have for the net, since it's sort of ham-related, is 33-centimeter propagation. I'm thinking of building a network using the ISM band, which is a subset of the 33-centimeter band, using a technology called LoRa, which is a spread spectrum digital mode. It's not exactly relatable to 33-centimeter FM because 33-centimeter, for instance, my FM handheld here for you know, 440 has a sensitivity of like 0.2 of a microvolt, and this is sensitive down to maybe 6 nanovolts, so it's not exactly the same, but I want to know what people think about urban 33-centimeter propagation. I know there are some 900 megahertz repeaters around the city, but I'm not sure if anybody has any experience.